Imagine a country where jobs are plentiful and families can get ahead. A country where veterans are treated with dignity and respect. A country so powerful, terrorism is in retreat. Our families safe. A country run by a leader whose career was built on success. A leader who isn't beholden to special interests, but to the people themselves. Make America great again. Donald Trump for president.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
Welcome to the IAM Radio Network, where noted authority coaches, authors, and speakers collaborate and bring to you the best in radio, TV, and live events worldwide. And now, the IAM Radio Network proudly presents the Dr. Simone Show with your host, Dr. Simone Reves. Get ready to go. Interactive.
Greetings, everybody, and thank you so much for joining me here at the Dr. Simone Show, The Mind Body Edge. And this is where we speak of things involving human behavior, mind body health, life experiences, consciousness, the changeable brain, and the like. These issues are vital for us to uncover and discuss, because they can educate us, heal us, help us grow, and improve the condition of humanity and the planet as a whole, or so we intend. I'm so glad that you've joined us today, and I'll share a little bit about myself so that you'll better be able to understand why I do these, what I think are wonderful radio shows, and I'm hearing a lot of good feedback from the audience about the shows as well, so keep that coming. It's great to hear. I want to know that I'm serving you. Well, in my former life, I was a clinical psychologist, and that was really an ideal job for me. I realized early, fortunately, that my life purpose was to help and to serve other people. And when I say early, I mean early. I have been told many stories and also have recollections of being about 5 years of age and being taken out for dinner by my parents, who were both clinical anthropologists. So that was quite an interesting upbringing. But we would be taken out to dinner, and I recall and was told that I would sit there and just lean to either side of my chair, desperately trying to overhear what other people at the other tables were talking about. To me, it was much more interesting than whatever we were talking about at our table. And I would be listening to those people, and then I would be looking around the restaurant and staring with my big child eyes at what was going on in the room and imagining what people were discussing. And my curiosity and others was huge. So fortunately, I had found my path quite early. And for the past years, I have been a certified business and life coach and a brain coach. I am fascinated by neuroscience, and it is an ideal interest to have at present because we're discovering things about the brain by leaps and bounds, and it's just giving us a better understanding of human nature, behavior, and a lot about human interaction and people in general. So today we're going to be talking about an aspect of human behavior that's very important and very interesting. So for all of you leaders, aspiring leaders, or have to be leaders, we'll be discussing leadership today with our expert, Linda Patton. Linda is also an entrepreneur, an international speaker, and national best-selling author who shows women how to realize their ability to lead, to dream, and to create in their lives what inspires them. As someone who walks her talk, and believe me, she does, Linda is founder and CEO of Dare to Dream with Linda, a dynamic enterprise which expresses her passion to support women in business. Through her programs and seminars, Linda takes her clients on a journey of self-discovery, personal empowerment, skills development, and a charted course toward becoming a leader of their own lives. With 40 years of corporate and military leadership experience and 15 years in network marketing, Linda is in a unique position to understand the, quote, art of herding cats. And I'm not saying hurting, I'm saying herding, like you would herd sheep. But this is the art of herding cats, to teach you how to herd them too. Linda holds an MBA in organizational behavior and leadership, a certificate in meeting management, as well as leadership positions in numerous professional management associations and women's business networking groups. She is the author of The Art of Herding Cats, Leading Teams of Leaders. She speaks to audiences worldwide on topics of leadership and empowering women in business. So join me in welcoming Linda to our show today. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Simone. Hi, thank you. It's so great to be here. And thank you for having me, Dr. Simone. It's an honor and a joy to be here.
Well, it's certainly our pleasure. And I know that the audience is going to learn quite a bit today. From our conversation that we had yesterday, I learned quite a bit. So it's going to be really wonderful.
Well, thank you.
First off, let's start with a little brief review of your personal story.
I was the poster child for the reluctant leader. To be honest with you, I never saw myself in leadership. And yet, as you said, my background is in the military. I retired as a major. So I had, as an officer, you get to lead all sorts of people. I led basic training troops. I led a general around because I was his protocol officer, and it was my job to make sure that he got where he needed to go and to do that kind of thing. I've been in corporations and have led as a manager of professional associations. It was really critical that I lead the board because I was the one who had day-to-day contact with the members and all of that. And yet I never saw that as leadership. It's just my job. And so it really wasn't until someone in workshop said to me, you know, Linda, I thought you'd lead us in this exercise. It's what I expect of you. That I really took a moment and looked at, you know, where I had come from, the job decisions that I'd made, the choices that I'd made, and how I'd done my work, and realized that she was absolutely correct, that I had not only the talent, but the skill to be a really powerful leader, but I really enjoyed hiding behind the curtain and to give the kudos to my general, to my association boards, to the people that I put on huge events for. It was those people that I wanted to have the glory and the kudos and the applause and all that, not me. So it really wasn't until I got into network marketing, we'll probably talk more about that, that I realized that leadership was a really critical piece to the success of individuals in that industry. And I wrote the book, The Art of Herding Cats, from that because I really felt strongly about it.
I've got to tell you about that title, and I'm sure you've heard it a million times, but I absolutely adore that title, The Art of Herding Cats, you know, and I think about my own cats, and they actually herd me towards their food dish every morning. So They're in charge in this house.
Yes. Well, and I'm talking, as you know, I'm talking about big cats.
Yes.
The types of women and men that we're leading aren't little cats. They're not the house cats who can herd you to the food bowl. I've had cats all my life, so I know whereof you speak as far as cats wanting, you know, I want this now. And having had Siamese at one time, they will not only herd you, but they will also command you.
They tell you.
Yes, you will feed me now. But I see the individuals, especially if they're independent consultants, or if you're an entrepreneur and you're working with independent consultants, they are powerful, big cats in their own right. And it's, how do I wrestle them? How do I herd them? How do I lead them in the direction that if we all go in that same direction, we will be extremely powerful and extremely successful, and we'll have huge teams that we get a chance to retain, as opposed to having to stay on the recruitment roller coaster.
Fascinating. You know, as I'm looking here, and you call yourself a leadership expert, the reluctant leader.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking about leadership in general, and I believe that leadership is largely learned. I think there may be some biological, temperamental characteristics that people can be born with that can contribute, people who are born to be, who are more open, outgoing, et cetera. But I think that leadership is largely learned. What is your take on that matter?
Yeah, I think that's a real critical point, Dr. Simone, that there is a talent to leadership, and I think everyone has it to some degree or others. You know, some of the leaders that we see as just sort of natural born leaders, they've always been out front, that kind of thing. That talent is really strong. But also, if you look at the acting profession, there are some actors who are just natural, and you know, they just exude that ability to command us into a role. But I would say 95% of the folks need skills. They need the skill development to truly take that talent and make it powerful. I remember there, and I can't quote it correctly, but Will Smith once said in an interview, you know, I have a bit of talent as an actor, but to be honest, to be where I am today, I had to hone my craft. I had to learn the skills. I had to continue to practice them and repeat them and really fine-tune that ability to act. And I think leaders have that same challenge. And the fact that there are some very key skills to leadership, and obviously there's more than just the 12 steps that I talk about, and that by learning those and fine-tuning them and refining them and really making them part of your DNA will really turn you into a powerful leader that will have the success that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lindo, tell me why you started out in particular helping women to reclaim their dreams.
Okay, I'm a woman who, I do a lot of things. I've been an independent business owner, as you said, for 30 years. And I found it real easy for me to take my dreams, to put them in a really pretty box with a really great bow, and put them up on the shelf behind the ski equipment and, you know, all the other stuff that's in the closet, and to forget about it. And I heard this from so many women that said, you know, I don't know where my dreams are. I'm getting to an age where I'm beginning to ask, is this all there is? Mm-hmm. And what is the third reel of my four reel film going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
That I wanted them and me to take those dreams off the shelf, to open up the box, to see what it is, and then to really begin to realize what that dream is and then how to make it happen.
I think a lot of times that women tend to do that because they're so directed towards helping other people get their dreams and taking care of other people. and putting themselves second, and therefore they place their dreams, you know, as you said, on the shelf, in the closet, whatever.
Yeah. And I think what's also true is that we let our roles in life get in the way of our dreams. So we're wives, we're mothers, we may work, we may be on volunteer opportunities within the school system or on, you know, philanthropy kinds of organizations. And so we get so involved and so immersed in that, as well as you said, the helping, because we very much are nurturers, that we forget about nurturing ourselves. I mean, I think one of the key things that, you know, we talk about is self-care and the whole nurturing of ourselves. And part of that is realizing, what are your dreams? Do you want to write a book? Do you want to travel the world? Have you always wanted to run a marathon? You know, whatever it might be. And to really begin to look at that, and how do I go about making that happen so that I'm fulfilled as while I'm helping other people to be fulfilled as well.
Exactly. Exactly. And why do you think it was difficult for you to kind of to step into leadership? And how do you see that translating to other women?
Great question. I think one of the key things was I was an only child of older parents. Mm-hmm. So I always felt I was socially inept. And so I was always scanning. I was always looking. I was always evaluating what other people were doing, you know, how they led, how they, we had a community baseball team that was basically on the street, and you know, the trees were the bases and that kind of thing. And I watched everyone else be the coach, and when it was my turn, I thought I did what they had done, and they laughed at me. And so I said, well, maybe I'm not meant to do this, you know, maybe that's not something I'm meant to do. And so I had some really interesting wounds when I was a child, of abandonment and just being criticized for things in such a way that I didn't want to step out. I didn't want to be out front. I felt it wasn't a safe place to be. And so I led from behind the curtain and been very successful at doing that. But it became time in the last 3 years for me to step out from behind that curtain and to truly show the leadership that I have and to make it visible as opposed to hiding. And it's a little scary, but I'm getting so much from the people that I'm working with that it fuels me to do more.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, you're acting as an ideal role model to the women with whom you're working. They see you out there, they see you doing your thing, and they see that, yes, it can be done. Linda's doing it. Mm-hmm. I can do it.
Exactly. And the whole, I mean, we talk a lot about wounding, you know, when we're young and how to overcome that. And I think we need those wounds in order to be the powerful women that we are today. Without those and those lessons that we've learned, we probably wouldn't be where we are today. And I think that's a powerful lesson to come out of that, not to be a victim of your wounds, but instead to use them to fuel your passion, to you know, move you into new roles that you've never been in before, and to take that step into leadership. I mean, my reluctant leaders are folks who go, no, not me, it must be somebody else. And yet, if you look at what they do with their family, with their philanthropic work, they step into leadership without even thinking about it. It's just part of that role. So to be able to see that in other roles that they're now performing, I think is a really important thing to do, is to get them to recognize that they've always been leaders to one degree or another. It's just how it manifests itself and how they can make it even more powerful than it is currently.
Right, right. And that just, you know, it speaks to how a lot of the lack of awareness that people have about their own lives not seeing that what they're doing in other areas of their life is leadership. And
yeah,
having to be shown and directed to see that that is.
Because we tend to compartmentalize the various roles that we're in. And, you know, I need these skills for here. I need these skills for this one. And we don't think about the fact that, that there are skills that transcend over all of our roles. And, again, can bring us so much more fulfillment and so much more joy when we use all of what we're given rather than just a piece of it. And I have a really hard time with us not, we as women not stepping into leadership. I look at corporate leaders and the fact that only about 15% of the board positions and top C-class jobs are held by women today. And that statistic hasn't changed in 10 years. I had heard a wonderful woman, she's at the deputy consul at the consulate of Israel here in San Francisco. And she said that Israel recognized this as well. And it's in the public domain. They put together lists of women who had skills, who they wanted to groom and to move into higher positions in their politics. And they're now at 40% of those top jobs being women. But she said, we haven't been able to make a dent in the private sector because we don't have that kind of control. And we as women, you know, if we don't have 90% of the experience and the skills that they're being that's being asked in a job description, we won't even apply.
Exactly.
But men, as you know, about, you know, I got 30% of it. I can learn the rest of it. And they'll apply for jobs that they're not qualified for, but they take the risk. We're not
risk.
In that place
right.
yet.
No. No, it's about perception and, you know, the cultural norms and what we've been taught. Unfortunately, we still feel the repercussions of, you know, the former decades and what women are supposed to be doing and all of that.
Yeah. You're so right. And I honestly think that this generation has the opportunity of making huge changes. I don't know whether you know, but Michelle Obama had a women's group. It was called United Woman Conference, and there were 5,000 women there who were personally invited to attend and to really begin that movement of moving women into higher and more top jobs and positions throughout the United States. So there's a recognition that we as women need to step into this leadership. And if we're going to make significant changes in the world, we have to be in those positions to make that happen.
Right. Right. So I know by that you're saying by teaching the skills and by helping women see that they do perform leadership activities, that will help them take those steps. What else do you think is required so that women will, for example, apply for the jobs where they only have 30% of the skill set? What will it take for them to become more tolerant of taking risks?
Risk taking is always an interesting challenge. And of course, some of it has to do with, you know, your personality style and that kind of thing and how risk averse you are. I honestly think that there are organizations and whatever who are crying for women to be in leadership positions. And this is what the woman said yesterday, was that they and the government had been crying for women to take senior roles. They wanted more women in those roles. And again, we weren't willing to step into it. So it's for them, it was creating this list and then encouraging and training and working with them to get them to move past that mindset. I think in some cases, it might just be having successes, you know, taking that risk. You know, we talk about one of the things that women are very concerned about is, I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want to mess up their lives. If I'm a leader, that I might make a mistake and, you know, mess up somebody's life.
Right.
And one of the things I asked them, I go, so are you married? And, you know, the answer is usually yes. I said, okay, well, when you signed the marriage license, did the officiant give you a owner's manual as to how to run this marriage? And, you know, and the answer was, of course, no. I said, well, do you think you had all the skills to make that marriage work? Well, no, I'm still learning. Well, it's really no different with a job. There are skills that you have. There are other skills that you have that aren't asked for in this job that you can apply to the position or, you know, the leadership or whatever. With children, I mean, here's a place where we can make, you know, huge mistakes, and we do impact their lives a lot.
Oh,
but,
hugely, yes.
Yeah. But again, when the baby was born, did your obstetrician give you an owner's manual? You know, this is how you deal with this child. This is the things that you're going to need to do. The answer is no. Even though Dr. Spock wrote those very interesting books, it still wasn't. I mean, people are people. And, you know, they are always fascinating and challenging of what you're doing. So, you know, if you're always afraid of stepping into something because you're afraid of making a mistake, how did you ever get through school? You know, so again, taking those lessons that you learned in school of, you know, you make a mistake and you learn from it and you move on. And so the same sort of thing with step into that role, even at 30%, you've probably got other skills that are far more necessary in that job that they didn't even think about. Right. And that they're losing the opportunity to experience you and to have you as a key part of the team that could really make a difference in the job, the company, the country, the world. It's just we need to work through that. What's that hesitation? What's in our DNA that makes us do that?
Right. Well, probably your book and the in-depth programs that you have largely help these reluctant leaders become more step into trying out roles to be leaders. How do they do that? How do your programs and your books help women?
Absolutely. I think, Dr. Simone, that in a lot of respects, it's seeing that it's really basic skills that we probably do on a fairly regular basis, but it's putting it in context of leadership. And again, recognizing that, hey, yeah, I sort of do this, but I could use some practice on it. I'm not as competent. I'm not as detailed as this often asks for. And so I give them confidence because they get a chance to practice it and to practice it with people on their team. They get to practice it with me. And with that, I see a confidence. It's amazing to watch somebody walk through the program and to see them grow in leadership and to get that confidence that, yes, I can do this. And I have been doing it. I have some experience in this. And you're helping me to fine tune that. And so I do work in a group program as well as individually. And I have...
Linda?
Yes, sorry.
You just got cut off a little bit. Can you repeat that last sentence?
Okay. I have teams that, because they're going through the program, have really seen an increase of over 20% of their team, more of their team being retained. Because in the work that I do, it's normal to see, you know, 30-40% of your team drop off. In any given quarter, month, whatever. And so you're on this roller coaster. You have to get it back up to where it was in order to move up. And I firmly believe that retention is key, and the only way to retain is to get out of that recruitment model and into a leadership model where you're showing them how to build deep relationships, how to know what's going on with people, how to build visions that are more than just, hi, I need to make $645 a month because my daughter's going to private school and I want to change the world. the first month they don't make $645, they're gone.
Right.
So not tying their their vision to just the money, but it's what else are you, you know, what else in your life?
It's the why.
Yeah.
Why do you want this? Why? I'm going to take a little break here.
Okay.
And then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about network marketing, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, great.
Hello, amazing listeners to the I Am Radio TV Network. We thank you so very much for being here with us today. We wanted to let you know we have an amazing opportunity coming up. We have available broadcast time. If you are a coach, author, speaker, or a business person looking to get your message out to the entire planet, then please get in touch with us as soon as possible, and we will go over the various levels of participation in our network. Again, we thank you for being with us here today on the I Am Radio TV Network. Now, get ready to go. Interactive.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Simone Ravis at the Dr. Simone Show, The Mind Body Edge. And I am here with leadership expert Linda Patton. Now, Linda was just talking about how through learning some leadership techniques and experiencing and practicing leadership, you can really have an impact on things like retention. And I think you were speaking specifically about your work as a network marketing. Is that right?
That's true. That's okay. Who I work with primarily.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, can you sort of define that for people who don't know what network marketing is?
Mm-hmm. I can. A quick story. I consider a serial networker. So I've been in and out of companies like this for probably 30, 35 years. And some of them I wanted just to buy the products. And I'm sure you all have, you know, bought a product from a network marketing company. And then others I really wanted to build a team because I felt very strongly about the product and wanted others to experience it. So for me, there are really about four different names for this. Some companies are called network marketing companies. Some are called multi-level marketing. Some are called direct sales. And sort of the new genre that came out of a company that I know intimately was direct marketing. Now, that has some interesting connotations as well. But basically, these are companies that are selling directly to the consumer, and they are companies that are building teams for which they get compensation either through the amount of purchases that are made or bonuses or that kind of thing. So the women who are in these companies are independent business owners, and they have a team of independent business owners. So this is another reason why I call them big cats. We're not talking about employees. I also do work with entrepreneurs who have a team of independent consultants. So I work primarily with individuals who have independent consultants on their team. And it's a powerful industry. As much as it is maligned and people say, oh, you know, the evils of network marketing, it's just a pyramid scheme. It is truly a way of doing business. And what amazes me is the number of Fortune 500 companies who have multi-level marketing or network marketing arms as how they get some of their stuff out. Dove Chocolate has one, and that kind of thing. So it just amazes me how from Amway, we've created this industry that is just gigantic.
It is. It's huge. I know that.
Yeah.
Very powerful. And I think in network marketing, is there a preponderance of women who work in network marketing?
I think that's probably one of the most intriguing things about network marketing is that, yes, the majority of the consultants, the majority of the people who are out in the field who are actually working with clients and customers and the teams are predominantly women. And yet the interesting thing is that I would say the majority of network marketing companies are run by men.
Oh.
Yeah.
There
so
you
we
go.
Get this, we get this disconnect. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why, you know, basically they're taught how to recruit. They're taught how to duplicate to recruit. And they're taught how to leverage promotions to recruit. Mm-hmm. So that's the push, is bringing new people in. And many of the seven-figure earners, that's their model. But there, to me, there's no foundation for their organization. And it's real easy for it to disappear and that kind of thing. But they just keep moving forward and recruiting without necessarily looking back as to what's going on behind them. Now, I'm not saying that they're totally ignorant of it, but recruitment is what they do. And it's a push every month to make sure that you keep your numbers up and that kind of thing. I want to change that.
In what way?
To me, everything in that kind of a model is very superficial. It works really well with social media, which is, you know, superficial relationships. When you talk to a person in your team, it's all about, you know, who are you calling today? How many people do you have in your next party? That kind of thing. And so I always say to people, so are you ready to slit your throat rather than doing another party? Because, you know, you don't feel like you're moving forward. With retention, it takes leadership. It takes building vision. It takes building relationships. So it's more than just what have you done for me today as far as volume and money. It's what's going on with you. You know, what's going on in your life? What's going on with your family? And really getting to know the people in your team and caring about them, caring, you know, as to are they going to grow or not. I had an interesting network marketing company that I'm working with who says 80% of the people on your team are your foundation, and they are your product buyers. They're the folks who are on auto ship. They're getting something every month from the company, and they're happy. And then you have, you know, like 10% who will move up in rank, but it's not a passion of theirs necessarily. They want to bring more people on, but they're not really pushing to be in the top levels of the organization. And then you have about 10% that are just going gangbusters and are going to blow through the compensation plan. And it's knowing how to nurture them, how to build a really deep relationship with them, how to use them and the talents that they have within your organization, and yet still nourishing that 80% who are just buying product. So it's how do you balance all of those communications and have a rich, growing team that's healthy. I think someone that's just built on recruitment is not always healthy. It's always sort of a slough off like you would have in a not necessarily well organization. So that's why I think leadership is so necessary and needs to be positioned within organizations. The hard part is getting them to hear that. One of the things I do say is inspiration is not leadership. It's a piece of leadership, but it's not leadership on its own.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. That definitely makes a lot of sense. What, you know, somebody just entering into leadership, what would you say to them? What tip would you have for somebody taking their first tenuous steps into leadership?
The first thing I always want them to do is to look at their vision and to look at what does that encompass. I have people build rich, bold, vibrant visions that include all five senses. So to give you an example, one of the companies I worked with was doing an Alaska cruise, and I wanted to go. It's been on my travel journal, my travel dream book for decades, and I had an opportunity to go. And so this is also when my examiner personality style drops in. And so I was like, what do I need to do? You know, what are the you go to the masculine side. What do I need to do? Right. Who do I need to call? How many, you know, all of that. But on the feminine creative side, it was what do you want? You know, and so I imagined this phenomenal trip. We were going to be on Celebrity Cruises, which is one of the top cruise lines. So I knew it was going to be absolutely elegant. So to, again, put it in all five senses, I had a picture of the glaciers and our boat that was a screensaver on every device that I had. Plus it was on my dream board, so I could look at it. Right. Constantly. I found a John Denver song about Alaska that was my ringtone for the entire time in the conference. I knew that I would be getting salmon, and I love salmon. So, you know, I'd order salmon every time we went out so I could taste it. And then for smell, you know, there's the cedar grilled salmon that I could smell, but I wanted something that I could do every day. And of course, you know that there's a lot of ice and snow in Alaska.
Right.
So I'd open my freezer and I'd smell the ice cubes. And I knew how I'd feel. I knew what that luxury cruise would feel like, what it would be like to be out in the cold watching the glaciers go by. And I, you know, in the 3 months time that we had, I got the balcony upgrade, told my husband, and he goes, wow, that's great, but do we have a cruise? And I go, nah, not yet, but it'll be in the next 2.5 months. And in 2.5 months, I had the cruise, and then I built cruise cash after that. So having that, I could lead my team, I could lead myself, I could lead my husband in making that happen. And so that's one of the first key things that I do. But before even that, I want them to understand what leadership is and what it's not. So we go through, you know, the whole nurture versus nature. I talk about leadership versus management and what the difference is, and how to express leadership as opposed to management. So they have a good sense of where they're going, and then this big dream that really drives them.
That's fantastic. So you went on the cruise.
Oh, yes. And it was everything that I thought it would be. And then even more.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
How wonderful. You know, I love creating visions and visualizing and what truly is, I think, so fascinating is when we're visualizing that our brains don't know that that's not the reality.
Oh,
our brains cannot tell the difference between when we're visualizing and when we're actually in that space and time. And so that's an ideal way to prepare your brain and for what you want, which then leads to changes in behavior to get what you want.
Exactly. And I know you talk about the reticular activating system.
Yes.
And the fact that, you know, you have to, if what you visualize, the little man in the car who's your limo driver says, you know, as you wish, and it makes it happen. So it wants the outside world and the inside world to be equal. I think that's so powerful.
Right. Yeah. The reticular activating system, it lets through when you tell it what you want. It lets through information that's relevant to what you want that it ordinarily wouldn't let through, which means you wouldn't ordinarily perceive it or be aware of it.
Well, and I mean, I'm sure everyone's had this experience where you go and you buy a car and you've never seen it on the road. You think you're very unique and no one has this car, and you start driving it home, and every other car that you look at is the car that you just bought. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's becoming important to you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, you brought up a point, and it's a little bit off the subject, but I kind of want to go into it a little bit, if it's okay with you. You mentioned the feminine and masculine sides.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about the masculine side as saying, okay, what do I need to do? And the feminine side as envisioning and using the creativity. Can you mm-hmm. talk about that a little bit more, about the masculine side and feminine side that we all possess?
Right. The feminine side, and I think it's where a lot of women sort of want to spend most of their time, is the creative. It's the juicy, sensual side of both men and women. It's where we, I like to say, I practice in the lab of experimentation. And so I take my feminine in there and just let her have at it with the lab. You know, what are we creating? What does it look like? You know, how does it feel? How does it, you know, all of that stuff. And then in order to make it happen, for example, you know, this whole program, The Art of Herding Cats, was really dealt with in on my feminine side as far as creating the book and the topics and how it worked and all of that. But in creating the modules for the program and sending out the emails and deciding where I was going to do this and all that, that was on the masculine side. That's the more task-driven, linear side of our personality. And so you have to eventually turn it over to that. And so many women don't want to be there.
Exactly.
I think in a lot of cases, think of it in terms of their finances. You know, it's really nice to sort of sit on the creative side of what would I do if I had $1 million or $10 million or whatever, but how do I get there? And that's more here are the steps to get there. And they don't want to play with the masculine side necessarily. It because for me, it's my examiner, and I like spreadsheets, and I like analyzing. I don't want to sit there forever, but it is a space that I have nurtured and I have grown so that I'm comfortable there, and I can spend, you know, the time needed in order to turn out an excellent program that I can record and you know, deliver to my clients. And I'm always refining. I'm always using the creative to say, well, how can we make it better? What? And then I allow the masculine to develop the slides that will augment that. So we have to play on both sides. We can't just be on the creative side. We have to, somewhere along the line, you have to implement it. And in order to do that, you need to activate your masculine side.
Right. And I think that may be part of the reason that a lot of women don't go for the leadership side of things.
Yeah.
It's because they're not accessing enough of the masculine part.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. What is the best mindset, you would say, for being a leader?
You specifically talking about like the four personality styles?
So just, you know, a mindset, the attitude, the approach. How to perceive things.
Yeah, I honestly believe that to activate your leadership, one, you have to be open and curious and willing to play in a lot of ways. It's taking all the stuff that we do, the creative stuff that we do, and actually bringing it to reality. And so it's having that open mindset of let's see what we can do. Let's being curious about the people on your team, the people you want to bring into your team, being vulnerable. All the things we talk about, being authentic and overcoming your fears of making a mistake. We all make mistakes. Bill Gates made mistakes. Steve Jobs made mistakes. The generals in World War II made tremendous mistakes. And yet they kept going. They learned from their mistakes and moved on. And I think that's really important. I looked at a documentary about World War to the people who were really famous in World War II, Churchill, Roosevelt, Hitler, MacArthur, Patton, all of those folks, and they looked at them from where were they in World War I? And many of them had huge setbacks. Churchill pushed for the attacks at Gallipoli, which was a huge disaster.
Right.
Hitler was damaged in World War I with mustard gas, and that kind of thing. So Roosevelt actually had some challenges in World War I as well, but that didn't stop them. They learned from that and were able to take those lessons into World War II and to powerfully use their leadership to, move millions of troops and to do battle with an enemy that had become totally mad. I thought it was fascinating to look at what Hitler had been able to do because no one wanted to confront him.
Right.
He took over just a massive amount of Europe, and had he been able to continue and not get sidetracked into his madness, he could have conquered the world. And I think that's a really powerful thing to look at, is how those men, because at that time women were not in key leadership roles, except Eleanor Roosevelt, and I find her a fascinating leader, but they were able to take their mistakes from World War I and learn from them in such a way that they did not create the same mistakes in World
War II.
Right. And I think that's critical. We have to be willing to do that.
Yes, we have to be willing to learn from our failures,
mm-hmm.
and to use that knowledge in
right.
order to move onwards. And I believe that too many people, once they have a failure, just shut down for fear
mm-hmm.
of repeating that failure.
Right.
Or,
and
as you mentioned earlier, causing damage.
Right. And if you look at Steve Jobs, here was a man who, a visionary leader, perfect in that respect, but a man that people didn't generally like. He didn't have the personality to
right.
go with it. And yet, he, quote, failed. He was fired from his company. And it didn't stop him. They ended
right.
up bringing him back, and he turned that company around and made it, one of the most highly innovative companies in the world, until his death. And, I think had he really, gotten into the misery of, oh my God, I failed, we would not have the iPhone, iPad, and some of the other fabulous devices that we have today. So it's learning from our mistakes and not making them again.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that's so critical, is forgiving ourselves and then moving
right.
on is just really, really important.
I can't help but think of people like Edison,
mm-hmm.
who quote-unquote failed thousands of times.
Yes.
And yet continued to go on, fortunately for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then, for example, Walt Disney, who was fired because they decided he had no creativity.
Yes, yes.
And go ahead.
Yeah, I think Edison made some comment about, I didn't fail. I found 10,000 ways not to make the electric light bulb.
Exactly. I love that attitude.
Yeah.
That's just wonderful.
Yeah. And I love my favorite three women leaders. One is Eleanor Roosevelt. I think this is a woman who was amazing in taking a totally undefined job of first lady. I mean, she was basically the party planner, and actually did a lot of the things that Roosevelt should have done but couldn't because of his handicap.
Right.
She was out
right.
there talking to people, working with the workers, the unions, and really making change in how the world how the U.S. Worked. She was the first director of the Human Rights Commission for the United Nations, a woman.
Mm-hmm.
That was just not something that ever happened in those 8 days.
Right.
Sheryl Sandberg, who I find absolutely fascinating
yes.
in her Lean In book,
right.
her story of leadership is just impressive. And then, okay, I know Hillary's on the docket as presidential candidate, but, you know, the first woman president actually was Edith Wilson, Woodrow Wilson's wife,
right,
who, when he had a stroke shortly after World War One ended, she carried his messages to the to his cabinet, and she made policy, quote unquote,
right,
and, because there was no succession plan at that time. And had she not stepped in and taken that leadership role, it could have collapsed the government, because there,
right,
was a, there would be a void there. And just a phenomenal woman. No one ever knew that that's what she did.
That's
and
right.
Yet she kept us moving forward until he was well enough to step back into the job.
Fantastic women who didn't get much credit. That's not
no.
That's a familiar story. Linda, we have about 3 more minutes for you. I know that we wanted to get to this. I know you have a 12-step leadership development program, The Art of Herding Cats, Leading
yes.
Teams of Leaders. What 3 skills do you believe to be the most critical to develop, and why?
Okay. The first one, obviously, is to me, is vision. If you can't make, if you can't create a big, bold, vibrant vision, it's going to be really hard for you to move forward passionately into leadership and to lead your team, because you need to have that end of the road. Where are we going on this road trip? And of course, then we'll work on how to get there. The second thing is building deep relationships. Superficial relationships won't cut it in keeping people on your team and motivating and inspiring them to be motivated to move forward in their own businesses. So knowing your people and knowing them as intimately as you can, and, you know, checking in on them to see how they're doing and how
right.
can you help and that kind of thing. And more than just what money have you brought in to my business this month.
Right. Right.
And I think that the last one is around celebration. We celebrate every little thing when we have a baby. You know, that first gassy smile,
yeah.
the first, you know, the first time they feed, all of that. We just celebrate everything. We take pictures of everything. And we don't do that with adults. So when you get someone new on your team, do you celebrate all the little things, like they made their first phone call. They had their first presentation. They did their first three-way. They made their first rank. They actually got a check in the mail. Celebrate the little things as well as the big things, like the car and the trip and the moving up in rank and that kind of thing. Celebration is so important, but also knowing, do they like to be celebrated and recognized publicly or privately,
right.
and understand what motivates them to continue to be superstars in your organization. Mm-hmm. So those are the 3 that I pick out of the 12.
Three skills. Well, I think, you know, I really like your last one about celebration, and you're right on when you say to celebrate the little wins,
mm-hmm.
because in terms of neuroscience, what happens with that is that your brain secretes more dopamine, the neurotransmitter, the feel-good neurotransmitter,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of feeds forward into making the person more motivated to continue striving and moving forward.
Exactly.
So you're hooking into the neuroscience with that as well, which I love, of course.
Of course.
Yes. Okay, so I wanted to thank you so much for joining us, Linda, today. Now, how can people get a hold of you?
They can go to my website, and if they click the opt-in piece, they'll actually get a free assessment and a 30-minute strategy session with me, and I'd love to make that happen for them. So if they go to www.dare2dreamwithlinda.com, they can get in touch with me there.
www.dare2dream and then what?
With Linda?
With Linda.
.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I wanted to make sure, because we lost you for a second there while you were saying it.
So
okay,
sorry.
Wonderful. Linda, thanks so much for joining us. You left, I think you gave us a lot of information and a lot to think about.
Thank you so much for having me again. It was an honor to be here, Dr. Simone.
Thanks. Take care. Well, we have reached the end of today's radio show, and we were with Linda Patton. I wanted to let you know that in 2 weeks, we'll be coming up with our next show, and I'll be joined by a fascinating woman, Eva Corrine Wallen, who is a mindset coach, a speaker, an author, and the founder of Freedom-Based Mindset, which is a technique that changes limitations into possibilities. She's at the forefront of how to use the subconscious mind. So that should be a fascinating show. And if you want to get hold of me, my website is www.successbraincoach. That's all one word, successbraincoach.com. And like Linda mentioned, you can take a free assessment on my website as well. And you can sign up for a complimentary 30-minute success strategy session. And I would love to speak with each and every one of you. Thank you so much for joining me today, and I hope you have a fabulous week. Goodbye.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar!
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything!
Imagine a country where jobs are plentiful and families can get ahead. A country where veterans are treated with dignity and respect. A country so powerful, terrorism is in retreat. Our families safe. A country run by a leader whose career was built on success. A leader who isn't beholden to special interests, but to the people themselves. Make America great again. Donald Trump for president.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.